Let me orient you to where we are in the book of Ephesians. In chapter 5, verse 15, Paul said, "Be very careful then how you live, not as unwise, but as wise." And he's been telling us how we ought to live our lives, how we ought to live or walk is the literal word. And what Paul is trying to say is that we ought to live as wise people, living with the wisdom of God. Well, how do you do that? Well, Paul explains that the way you do that is by having your life under the control of the Spirit of God. And so he discusses being filled with the Spirit. To live a wise life, to walk wisely, you must be under the control of the Spirit. To be under the control of the Spirit will have certain effects in your life or certain results in your life and in my life. When you and I are under the control of God's Spirit, when we are living this Spirit-filled life, it will affect the way we talk, with the way we talk to each other and the way we talk about each other. When we are under the control of the Spirit of God, it will affect the way we talk to God and about God. When we're under the control of the Spirit of God, we will be thankful people. When we're under the control of the Spirit of God, we'll be submissive people. That is, respecting one another. And then Paul gets then to the family and applies his teaching to the family. If you're walking in the Spirit, if you're living a respectful, submissive lifestyle, he's saying that a wife submits by respecting her husband. A husband submits by loving his wife sacrificially. And now in chapter 6, we're going to get to children and fathers, and really the word for father there can be taken in a sense that's generic, talking to parents. But particularly Paul mentions fathers because under God's economy, they are the head of the family. So he's talking not just to fathers, but also to mothers, but particularly to fathers. And then we're going to get into in about 2 weeks the work relationships that we have and how submission works out in those. The way a child submits to his or her parents is by being obedient. The way a father or parents submit to their children is by training them in righteousness and by not exasperating them. That's where we're headed this morning. That's what we want to talk about this morning. Paul writes in Galatians 6:1, "Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment with a promise, that it may go well with you and you may enjoy long life on the earth." In other words, there are certain duties and obligations that are incumbent upon children. Then there are reciprocal duties or obligations incumbent upon parents. Verse 4, "Fathers, do not exasperate your children. Instead, bring them up in the training and instruction of the Lord." So the reciprocal duty, the duty of a child is obedience, but the reciprocal duty of parents is loving, considerate discipline. Loving, considerate discipline. All right? Let's start with children in verses 1 to 3. Paul writes, "Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right." Now, there's a lot there. What does it mean in the Lord? Does it mean for this is right? Paul begins by giving the instruction, "Children, obey your parents." Children, obey your parents. One writer said this, "The child's primary duty to his parents is obedience. A timely reminder in these days when we regard the freedom of a child as an absolute." Paul is saying that children's duties to a child's duties to their parent is to be obedient. Some writers define that obedience this way. One writer defined it as listening to the advice that your parents give. That's part of obeying your parents, listening to the advice they give. Another part is a readiness, as one writer called it, a readiness to hear. A readiness to hear your parents. You know, we all hear about kids who turn off their parents. They don't want to hear what they have to say. Well, this is saying to children that they are to be ready to listen to their parents. They aren't to be turning off their parents. They aren't to be turning to somebody else. They are to be ready to listen to their parents. What's the reason for this? Why does God give this instruction that children should be obedient to their parents? Well, it's because, as Warren Wiersbe said, that parents have more knowledge and more wisdom than their child. parents have more knowledge and more wisdom than their child. Parents have lived a lot longer. They've experienced a lot more. If they are Christian parents, then they have experienced a lot more of a walk with the Lord. And children should be ready to listen. Now, obviously, we're talking here about children in the home, okay? We're talking about younger children. We're talking about toddlers. We're talking about those who are pre-adolescent, adolescents, teenagers, talking to here. Our relationship with our parents changes once we're out of the home, whether it be we reach the majority age, whether we move out on our own, somewhat when we go to college, although we're not really independent at that point. But there comes a time when we move out of our parents' homes, obviously, for sure, when we get married. We establish a new home, a new relationship. And we've talked about the fact that once we are, particularly once we're married, for the last couple of weeks, we've been talking about, for this reason, a man will leave his father and mother, be united to his wife, the two become one flesh. The new primary relationship is that of husband and wife. It's primary to the relationship you have with your parents. By the way, there's another side of that. It's also primary to the relationship you have with your children. I want you to understand that. I don't think we talked enough about that over the last couple of weeks. If you're married, out of the house, you're married, the primary relationship is to your mate. That's primary over the relationship with your parents. They become trusted advisors, but that relationship is now secondary because your mate is your primary relationship. But also, that relationship between you and your mate is primary over the relationship with your children. Unfortunately, in too many homes, it doesn't work out like that. And children are elevated above a mate. Right? So, obviously, Paul is talking here to children who are still in the home. He's talking to toddlers on up to teens when you leave your parents' home. And the duty of a child is to obey, to listen to advice, to be ready to hear their parents, to recognize that their parents have a lot more, your parents have a lot more insight into life. They've lived a lot more, they have more knowledge, and they have more wisdom and insight into the way to live. Paul says, children, obey your parents in the Lord. Now, what on earth does he mean by in the Lord? Does that mean that if your parents are Christians, you have to listen to them, but if they're not Christians, you don't have to listen to them? There are some cases where, and maybe you're one of those cases, where a child comes to know Christ before their parents do. Is Paul here saying that unless your parents are Christians, you don't have to obey them? No, he's not saying that at all. When he says here, children, obey your parents in the Lord, what he's saying here is that it pleases the Lord for children to obey their parents. It's not saying that they should not obey if they're not Christians. Whether your parents are Christian or whether they're non-Christian, when you're in their home, you are to be obedient to them. And because it pleases the Lord. How do we know that? Look at the parallel passage in the book of Colossians. Colossians chapter 3 and verse 20 is the parallel to Ephesians 6 and verses 1 to 3. The parallel passage is found in Colossians 3, where Paul deals, in verse 20, Paul deals with the same subject. Children, he says, obey your parents in everything, for this pleases the Lord. In other words, it's pleasing to the Lord. It pleases the Lord for you to obey your parents, for a child to obey their parents. That's what it means. That's what it means when Paul says in Ephesians chapter 6, obey your parents in the Lord. He's talking about it's pleasing to the Lord for a child to obey their parents. We're going to have a lot. We're not going to get to it today, but next week we're going to look at a number of Proverbs. And the Proverbs are very clear that when we have children who are disciplined, it is not only pleasing to the Lord, but it's pleasing to us that our children are disciplined. It's pleasing to the people around us that our children are disciplined. There's nothing worse than having to look at a family, whether it's in our own circle or whether it's a family in the mall or in Walmart or wherever it may be, where a child, you just know the child's in control of that family. And you just know that that child's undisciplined. Paul says children should obey their parents. It pleases the Lord for children to obey their parents. It pleases the Lord for children to obey their parents. And then he goes on to say, for this is right. Now, he doesn't just mean it's a cultural thing to do, it's the right thing to do in our culture, it's the customary thing to do. When he says, for it is right, what he's saying is that under God's economy, in God's way of looking at the family, it's right that children are disciplined. It's right that children are under the control of their parents. It's right that children are obedient to their parents. Now, again, we're talking about children, young children in the home up through teenage years. That's what we're talking about here. It's right. It's not just the custom. It's not just because it's cultural. But Paul says it's right. Under God's economy, on the way God looks at the family, it's right that children should obey their parents. Now, Paul then makes an application of an Old Testament passage to show that this is not just a New Testament concept, but this is a concept that comes out of the Old Testament as well. And he quotes the fifth commandment. He quotes Exodus chapter 20 and verse 6. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment with a promise that it may go well with you and that you may enjoy long life in the earth. Now, by the way, did you realize, of course, that the commandments, at least some of the commandments, are repeated in the New Testament? Did you realize that? Did you know that? How many are repeated in the New Testament? How many of the Ten Commandments? Remember, we start out with ten. Okay? How many of the Ten Commandments are repeated in the New Testament? Nine. Nine of the Ten Commandments are repeated in the New Testament. What's the one that's not repeated in the New Testament? The Sabbath day command. The Sabbath day command is not repeated in the New Testament. We're not told in the New Testament to honor the Sabbath day and keep it holy. We're never told that in the New Testament. In fact, Paul says, and I don't want to get off on a rabbit trail here, Paul says in Romans that some people consider one day important. Some people consider every day a day to worship God. And he said you should decide in your heart what's right. The New Testament doesn't repeat the commandment about the Sabbath. But it does repeat the other nine. And here's one of those places where Paul is quoting from Exodus 20 and verse 6. Honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment with a promise. Now, there's been a lot of speculation about what on earth does that mean, the first commandment with a promise. And to be quite honest with you, some commentators even go so far as to say nobody knows what that means. Let me tell you the choices here, okay, the possibilities. It's not the first commandment that has a promise attached to it because there are earlier commandments with promises attached to them. So that's the dilemma. What does Paul mean here that this is the first commandment with a promise? Since there are earlier commandments with promises attached. There are two possibilities. One is that the word first here is being used in a different sense than first in order. It's being used in the sense of primary importance, of first importance. In other words, it's of vital primary importance to a child to understand that they're to honor their parents, that they are to obey their parents. It's of primary importance. And that's a very possible interpretation here. Secondly, it may be that Paul's saying is the first commandment with a specific promise. A specific promise. The earlier commandments have, and some of the other commandments have kind of general promises, but this is a very specific promise that's attached to the fifth commandment of honoring your father and mother. Well, what is that? Paul explains it in verse 3, that it may go well with you and that you may enjoy long life on the earth. You see, what Paul is saying here is that when you live a disciplined life, when your children live a disciplined life, they will live long on the earth because when people are undisciplined, they sometimes lead to the shortening of their lives because of the things they get involved with. They get involved in dangerous lifestyle. They get involved in dangerous activity that puts their lives at risk. And so, therefore, their lives may be shortened. So, what Paul is saying here is when you live a disciplined life, when your children are disciplined, when you as a child are disciplined, and that stays with you through life, when your children are disciplined, they will live a better life. They will live a longer life. That's what Paul's saying here. In the Old Testament context, the application was to Israel and the land promise, living long in the land God will give you. But Paul here takes the promise and he expands it to include the people of the church age, and the fact that he expands it to children who obey their parents are promised a long life. Now, it's a general promise. It does not mean that there aren't righteous children who will die young. Many times, a righteous child will die young. But generally speaking, what Paul is saying here is that when a child is obedient, their lifestyle is such that they have a more fulfilling life. They have a longer life. That's what he's saying here. That's why it's so important. That's why it's so important for you who are parents. That's why it's so important for you who will be future parents. That's why it's so important to children to understand that if they want to live a fulfilled life, if they want to live a long life, if they want to live an enriched life, it has to be a disciplined life. One writer put it this way: when children obey their parents in the Lord, they will escape a good deal of sin and danger and thus avoid the things that could threaten or shorten their lives. Another writer said it this way: this states a general principle that obedience fosters self-discipline, which in turn brings stability and longevity in one's life. Stated conversely, it is improbable that an undisciplined person will live a long life. So many times, particularly in Proverbs, and we're going to see this next week in the book of Proverbs, there's a connection between our children living a disciplined life and them living an enriched, long life. Undisciplined life, a life lived outside of the discipline of their parents, outside of the discipline of God, that life will be cut short. And the Proverbs says that over and over and over again. There's a connection. Let me give you a good Old Testament illustration. And I'm not going to read the passage. I'll tell you where the passage is found. I'll explain the account to you. It's found in 1 Samuel chapter 4. And we're talking about the sons of Eli. Remember, Eli was the priest, the high priest, when... What's Samuel's mother's name? Anybody remember the lady who could not get pregnant, and every year they go up to the tabernacle, their family would go up. What was her name? Hannah. And you remember at one point she is praying bitterly, crying out to God, please give me a child. And Eli saw her and thought she was what? Drunk. He said, this woman's drunk. Are you going to drink here at the tabernacle? Now, I'll tell you what's really odd about that. Eli had two sons. I dare you to tell me their names. Hophni and Phinehas. That's right. Hophni and Phinehas are the two sons of Eli. Now, it's interesting that Eli should confront Hannah about being drunk. Now, she wasn't drunk, but confront her about being... She was just so torn with grief over crying out to God, please give me a child. And she wasn't drunk, and he confronts her, and yet his own sons were guilty of the grossest immorality at the very door of the tabernacle, and he never, ever disciplined them. Never. And you'll read in 1 Samuel 4, and particularly in verse 11, how God decided to shorten the lives of those two sons, Hophni and Phinehas, because of their sin and their undisciplined life. And because their father never, it says their father never disciplined them, never called them to account. That's the idea here. When a person lives an undisciplined life, they live a dangerous life. When a person lives an undisciplined life, they get into things they ought not to get into that can affect their health, affect their life, affect their being free or behind bars. It can affect a lot of things. It begins in the home. That's where it begins. If you don't start to train your children to live disciplined lives and to be disciplined people. And by the way, that's our goal. You know that as parents. That's our goal, is to bring our children up in such a way from the toddler years on up through the teen years to bring them up in such a way that they become independent followers of Jesus Christ. That's the goal. That's the goal. Emphasis on the word independent followers of Jesus Christ. Not always dependent on mom and dad. A faith not dependent on mom and dad's faith. Our goal is to make our children, bring our children to the point where they're self-sufficient. We can't do that without exercising discipline over them and in their lives. And we'll say a lot more of that, about that when we get to verse 4, particularly next week. If children are to get the promise that God says to live long life, a full life, they are going to need our discipline as parents and future parents. They are going to need our discipline. They are going to need for us to be investing in their lives. Now, that's what Paul has to say to children. Let me just share, before we move on to what he says to parents, let me share a couple of principles, four principles from it's a book that we actually had a Bible study a year or so ago in eight vital relationships that a Christian has. Eight vital relationships. The book is called Growing in the Family, Eight Vital Relationships. One of the chapters deals with family life. And there's a section here speaking to pre-adults. Pre-adults. That is, you're still in your parents' home. We're not going to call you children. We'll call you pre-adults, okay? Four principles that the writer of the book suggests. Number one, parents are priceless. Parents are priceless. They go on to say, you would never have made it this far without them. They deserve your honor. Parents are priceless. You would never have made it this far without them. They deserve your honor. Now, in saying that, I understand that, and in almost about 30 years of ministry, I understand and I've heard the horror stories. I've heard some of the awful things parents have done to their children. That is the extreme. That is the extreme. And I want to acknowledge that. I want to acknowledge that. But in most families, this is a true principle. Parents are priceless. You wouldn't have made it this far without them. They deserve your honor. They deserve your honor. Secondly, second principle, parents are chosen by God. Do you ever think about that? Your parents aren't random. Whether you're their parents by birth or by adoption, that's not random. That's under the control of God, and I like that principle. Parents are not only priceless, parents are chosen by God. Thirdly, and I love this, I hope you write it down and I hope you underline it. Parents are human. You teens may not believe that. Parents are human. Humans are not perfect. They make mistakes. Nothing worse than to find an adult child who's still blaming their parents. You know, at some point you gotta say, you know, pull up the britches and say, I'm in charge of my life. I'm in charge of my life. Parents are human. That means they're not perfect. And that means they make mistakes. And folks, I know that some of them are big mistakes. Some of them are big mistakes. But parents are human and not perfect, and they make mistakes. I have an illustration of that I want to share with you, and it's a illustration from the military. Oddly enough, I thought that might communicate, it's applied to parents. During war games, Private Glenn Sully and Private Andrew Bearshield of the 15th Infantry were ordered to make their way to a bridge and stand guard there until they were relieved. The two were faithful soldiers. They went to the bridge and guarded it. They stuck to their job for 3 days and nights with neither food nor blankets. They eventually were found rather than relieved. the two privates had been guarding the wrong bridge. Can't happen into GPS today, right? This is pre-GPS, okay? The two privates had been guarding the wrong bridge. They had lost their way and taken their battle stations at a bridge 7 miles away from the one they were to guard. One might suppose they were reprimanded for making such a mistake. On the contrary, they were given military honors for guarding their position with such faithfulness. Now the application to parents. The writer says this: very often our parents make mistakes in life. They can make wrong turns or follow what turns out to be foolish pursuits. But rather than criticize them or blame them for their errors, we can choose to focus on what they did right. In turning our attention to their positive qualities and deeds, however meager they may be, we usually find we have no difficulty giving them honor. All right, parents are priceless. That's the first principle. Parents are chosen by God. Second principle, parents are human. That's the third principle. And fourthly, parents are to be obeyed. Parents are to be obeyed. You may not always agree with them, but God does expect you to obey them. Now, you understand, and I made this caveat in the first service as well. You understand when I'm talking about obedience, for children being obedient to their parents, in any relationship of obedience. We're talking about obedience to things that are not immoral or illegal. Okay, if your parent tells you to do something immoral or illegal, you refuse under God. There's nothing wrong with that. I want that to be clear. But generally speaking, parents are not asking you to do illegal or immoral things, and you may not always agree with them, but God expects you to obey them. Now there are three questions that I thought were really good. Let me share three questions we might ask ourselves. This comes, again, out of the book, Eight Vital Relationships. Three questions we might ask ourselves. Have you ever thanked God for parents? Have you ever thanked God for parents? Second question. Have you ever thanked God for your parents? You know, it's one thing to thank God for parents. Oh, God, thank you for parents. We wouldn't have kids without parents. Thank you, God, for parents. But have you ever thanked God for your parents? Okay, third question. What specifically have you done to show your parents that you appreciate them? What specifically have you done to show your parents that you appreciate them? I think those are three good. If you needed an application for today, I hope that's one you take with you. Okay, let's look at the other side of the coin, verse 4. Verse 4. Paul writes, "Fathers, do not exasperate your children. Instead, bring them up in the training and instruction of the Lord." Paul turns his attention now to fathers. Now, it's really interesting. There's a favorite quote I have about a quote by General Douglas MacArthur, and I have shared it in the past. Let me share it with you. By the way, I always struggle because I know that many times those of you who are longtime attenders say, well, I remember hearing this before, or Joe used this illustration before. Let me tell you what my struggle and my problem is. Our congregation changes about every month. It's like a whole new congregation. And so some of these things I'd like to share with you who may not have heard them before. So if you heard you remember it, I hope that it will mean something to you. If it's new to you, I hope that it will make the point. General Douglas MacArthur said this: "By profession, I am a soldier and take pride in that fact, but I am prouder to be a father." Isn't that great? How many of you ever thought, when you thought of General Douglas MacArthur, thought about that he would be prouder of being a father than being a soldier? I think there's no more wonderful word, at least from my vantage point. You ladies may disagree with me. But from my vantage point, I think there's no better word in the English language than daddy. I loved hearing my kids say daddy. I can't tell you. There's just something about that. It just is just incredible to hear them say, Daddy. I was having a conversation with one of my friends from our church in Arkansas. This is way, way back because we've been here 17 years. But in Arkansas, and he and I were good friends and had young children, and he was kind of grousing about being a dad one day. And we're just talking and having coffee. And I said, Daniel, I got to tell you, I love hearing my kids say daddy. That word is so important to me. I can't tell you. It just means everything to me. And you know, about a week later, Daniel called me and he said, you know what, Joe? I've been thinking about it. You're right. I remember one time when Tim was just a little guy and just barely able to use a phone, but not old enough to understand an answering machine. And so he dialed the number to the church. And I was away at the time, and he got the answering machine, which had my voice on it. Thank you for calling the name of the church and, you know, all of that. He thought I was actually there because he didn't understand the answering machine. And when I got back later, I hit the button on the answering machine, and I hear this, Daddy! 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 And he's getting more desperate, you know, because he doesn't understand. He thinks I just am not answering him. Broke my heart when I listened to it later. You know, he doesn't understand. It's an answering machine. I wasn't there. Daddy! Daddy! You know, I guess he thought if he did it louder, I'd answer him. And then finally, the thing that just broke my heart more than anything, I heard this, oh. And I tried to explain my best to him later. You know, Tim, it's an answering machine. I wasn't there. I'd always talk to you. Daddy, fathers. You know, in the Roman world, they had unbelievable power. In the Roman world, fathers had incredible, absolute power. Listen to the description of the power of a father by one writer. Under the patria potestas, a Roman father had absolute power over his family. He could sell them as slaves. He could make them work in the fields, even in chains. He could punish as he liked and could even inflict the death penalty. Further, the power of the Roman father extended over the child's whole life so long as the father lived. A Roman son never came of age. Even when he was a grown man, even if he were a magistrate of the city, even if the state had crowned him with well-deserved honors, he remained within his father's absolute power. The writer goes on to say, it is true that the father's power was seldom carried to its limits because public opinion would not have allowed it, but the fact remains that in the time of Paul, the child was absolutely in his father's power. Warren Wiersbe described the times this way. In Paul's day, the father had supreme authority over the family. When a baby was born into a Roman family, for example, it was brought out and laid before the father. If he picked it up, it meant he was accepting it into his home. But if he did not pick it up, it meant the child was rejected. It could be sold, given away, or even killed by exposure. That's the kind of power that fathers had in that day. That's why what Paul says here is revolutionary. What Paul says here to Christian fathers is revolutionary. Fathers, do not exasperate your children. Instead, that's the negative side. Instead, bring them up in the training and instruction of the Lord. In the parallel passage in Colossians chapter 3, verse 21, Paul says it this way. Fathers, do not embitter your children, or they will become discouraged. Fathers, do not embitter your children, or they will become discouraged. You know, it's interesting that Paul begins with the negative side. Don't you find that interesting? He doesn't begin with fathers, train your children. He begins with fathers, don't exasperate your children. Don't exasperate your children. What does that mean? It means as you discipline your child, because discipline is absolutely necessary in the home. Dad, mom, as you discipline your child, don't do it in such a way that it discourages your child or embitters your child. You have the authority to discipline. You have the obligation to discipline your child, but you are not given carte blanche. What does it mean, do not exasperate? It literally is do not provoke to anger. Do not provoke to anger. In other words, the discipline that you choose to use should not be discouraging to your children. It ought to build them up. It ought to lift them up. It ought to encourage them. We'll have a lot more to say about that next week when we get into some Proverbs about discipline and the need for discipline. But generally speaking, what Paul's saying here, first he's dealing with the negative side. Don't exasperate your children. How do you exasperate children? Let me share a couple of ideas and then we're going to be done for today. How do you exasperate children? The idea is don't irritate them. Don't cause resentment in them. How do you exasperate children? You do it by unreasonable demands. They know what's right. They know what's reasonable. And you can exasperate your child. You can embitter your child. You can discourage your child by making unreasonable demands. You can discourage them by nagging them all the time. Now remember, I said parents are human, right? Parents make mistakes. Because as we go through this list, you're going to see yourself, and I see myself in these things. All right? Parents are human, they make mistakes. The thing is, we ought to move beyond them, and we ought to correct those mistakes. By the way, nagging never worked on anybody. Husbands, it's not going to work on your wife. Wives, it's not going to work on your husbands. Parents, it's not going to work on your children. Nagging and did you do this yet? Did you clean your room? 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 If you don't clean your room, this is going to happen. If you don't, you know what I'm talking about, and nothing ever comes of it. As parents, we ought to say what we mean and mean what we say. Our kids will respect us for that. If we say what we mean and mean what we say, don't threaten. This is going to happen if you don't do it. They know you're never going to do what you say. Now, by the way, kids want boundaries. They want boundaries. They want to know where the wall is. They'll never tell you that, and they'll never act like they want the boundary. They'll always tell you they want the boundary further out than it is, but they're glad to know where the boundary is. And you will do them a great justice by giving them boundaries. And meaning what you say and saying what you mean. How do you provoke children to anger, discourage them, embitter them? You do it by nagging. You do it by unreasonable demands. You do it by being capricious in the way you treat them. By being inconsistent in your discipline. You know what I'm talking about. Like today they do something and it's fine. You don't say anything about it. But tomorrow you're in a bad mood. Tomorrow you had a bad. Tomorrow is a bad day, and the child does the same exact thing, and you blow up, and you discipline them. How are they going to learn anything from that? How's that going to do anything but embitter or discourage them? Because they don't know. Well, yesterday it was okay. Today it's not okay. I don't understand. I don't know what to do. You irritate, cause resentment by being capricious, by being inconsistent in treatment, by teasing, I don't just mean mild teasing, I mean like heavy duty teasing. Ridicule, persistent scolding, not keeping promises, that's another big one. Particularly dads, you know, I understand you're not in control of every part of your life and you may make a promise to your child and your job comes along, whatever that job is, and all of a sudden you can't keep it. But generally speaking, you and I ought to keep promises to our children. I love the story told in this dad's devotional that I have read repeatedly for years that Kathy and the boys gave me, and I've profited so much from it, about a dad who had promised his sons he was taking them to the circus. It was in town. And he left work early, came home so that they could go to the circus together. And as they're leaving to go out the door to get in the car to go to the circus, the phone rings and his wife picks it up and it's the office. And she hears his conversation and she knows what's coming. He's got to go back to work. But then to her surprise, she hears him say, "Well, I'm sorry, but I can't come back today. I'll handle it tomorrow." Hangs the phone up, heads out the door again, and she's a little worried now. She says, "Are you sure that was wise? To tell your work that you can't go back and take care of? Are you sure that was wise?" You know, the circus will always come back. And he looked at her and said, "Yes, but childhood won't." That's great. I've always felt that as much as I'd like to be a good pastor, I've much more desire to be a good husband and father. I'll bet that as much as you want to be a good pilot or teacher or whatever it is that you do, I'll bet that for most of you, many of you, you would rather be a good mother or a good father. If not, I hope you'll consider that. Hope you'll consider that. Not keeping promises, harsh treatment, unfair treatment are ways that we discourage our children. Let me close with this, and we're going to get into some Proverbs next week and some other things, but let me close with this story. How many of you have ever seen a flea circus? I'm not kidding. You never heard of anybody hear of a flea circus? Did you ever hear one? Okay, several of you have. Let me share this with you. "For a number of years, flea circuses were quite popular. Today, few people have seen a flea circus, much less know how fleas come to be trained." Didn't know they could be trained, did you? Okay. "When fleas are first put into a jar, they jump wildly. Since fleas are incredible jumpers, a lid must be put on even a large jar in order to keep the fleas contained. Still, they continue to jump, hitting their heads on the lid again and again. Over time, however, the fleas no longer jump as high as they did initially. Most of them jump to a height that is just a fraction of an inch from beneath the lid. At this point, a flea trainer can remove the lid from the jar. The fleas will continue to jump, but now they no longer jump out of the jar. The reason is simple. They have conditioned themselves to jump only so high. Once conditioned to jump to that height, that's all they can do. They will never again regain their ability to jump higher." Now the application. Have you capped your child in some way today? Have you built a ceiling so low for your child that he or she is forever hitting their head? Remove that lid quickly. Otherwise, you may forever stunt his concept of his own potential. Paul said it this way, "Fathers, do not exasperate your children." Let's bow together in prayer. Father, thank you. Thank you for the very plain and simple instruction of the Word. Help us to take to heart, whether we are presently parents or looking forward to being parents at some point in our lives. Help us, Father, to take to heart these words. Help our children understand that our discipline is necessary for them to live a long and prosperous life. Help us to be consistent in doing that. We pray these things in Jesus' name. Amen.